I'll never forget the first moment when I walked into a cinema. I was hooked from there on.
Hello and welcome to the 34th Canon Podcast.
You're getting ahead of yourself there.
Myself, yes.
He's from the future.
Yeah, I've been sent back in a time machine you invented. No.
Sorry, fella. This is why we're podcasting about film and not writing films.
We would just rip off Back to the Future, don't
we? Who wouldn't?
Yeah, exactly. That screenplay is magnificent.
Yes.
Anyway, usual trio are here as per usual.
The usual as per usual.
Yes.
That's us.
The unusual suspects.
Yes.
There's a script.
I feel unusual.
I think we should give outside.
It's a big dream with the reference there. Sorry.
There will be many of those.
As there often are.
Mm. Yes.
So, we'll start with what we've been watching in the last 10, 12 days. So, Jason.
Seems like a long, long time ago.
Yeah, when was that?
Yeah.
12 days ago.
Okay, I got a few things. I OD'd on ESPN 30 for 30 Docs, which are kind of documentaries about sport. I know that's kind of, Philip's kind of hissing almost with the idea, but they're fantastic. I'd recommend a lot of them.
Sport. What is that?
They're really good documentaries, Phil. Okay. Pretend they're about politics or something. But they're very good. One particularly about Hillsborough, which is amazing. But I watched a lot of those. Thank you, Netflix US. But in film terms, I've got a couple that I watched. A rewatch of Misery, or When Rob Reiner Was Good.
Rob Reiner. He didn't get out of the cock-a-doodle car.
Yeah. It's fine. It's still very
excellent.
Good. Kathy Bates. Good Lord, she's fantastic.
She's terrifying.
Yeah.
And sweet at the same time.
I was afraid from minute one. It's been a few years since I've seen it. Khan is weird in it. I think he's weirded out by her performance.
As you would be.
That's why it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly that. And this, the tension from the smallest of things, it's such a small movie. Like, it's just, it's a rumor, really.
Yeah.
Very, very good. Very effective.
The hobblings, and I presume, still works.
Yeah.
Oh.
And there's Richard Farnsworth as well, who's great.
Yeah.
It's always so good. Don't we? Fabulous actor. But it's so much fun. And as much as, like, I've read the books several times, I've seen the movie several times, but still the tension, and everything, trying to get the key in the door and
fun.
Fun
is not an adjective you'd expect for a film named Misery.
But it is, though. Like,
it is.
It's over the top, it's camp on occasion, it's Kelly Bates, it's our show, which she deservedly won an Oscar for. But I was a big fan. And the other one I watched was The Guest.
Ah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Now.
This is interesting.
That's a word for it.
Yeah. I don't know. I just don't know. I vaguely liked but didn't love Your Next, but I could see kind of potential.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of feel the same way about this. So many references, so many callbacks to kind of particularly the 80s kind of stuff.
Hmm.
Kind of horror thriller soundtrack, the whole thing. And Dan Stevens is great.
He's excellent.
Very, very good.
It's a star-making drama.
Yeah, it is. And he carries the film through some seriously implausible nonsense.
As it loses its wing.
Yeah, and
the second act goes completely off the rails.
First act is great.
Great build-up.
Yeah, really great build-up. Really interesting story. Very knowing in the sense you've seen the return and vet and all his family, and you know, I wonder if this is going to go wrong. But I think he'll make a good film at some point.
Wingard.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I genuinely do. I think he has something. I think once he shakes off all those kind of influences, because I think getting him out of the system might be key.
He's
not quite there yet. But I didn't dislike either of them. There's something in both that I liked, but not enough maybe to say they're good films as such.
I think I'm pretty much with you on that. I like Your Next Steps a little more. But ultimately, these two films are more genre experiments than any real satisfying films in their own right.
And that's the thing. If you're going to take something like this and be knowing about genre, you got to bring something to the table yourself. And I don't think he brings enough. I don't think he brings really anything to Your Next. And I think very little to this.
Yeah.
Other than what's gone before that, you know, all right, and so what? What else have you got? And not a lot there, but I think he has something. I think he's a good eye. I think, as I said, Nancy's great. Like, and it's some of the scenes are so well done. Like some of the fight scenes are excellent. But it passed 90 minutes, no problems, fine. But you realise that you can see the point where it runs out of ideas almost, you know.
It's the halfway mark.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But yeah.
Okay. It's okay.
Like you say, it'll pass the time.
Yeah. But I think you'll do better.
Here's hoping.
Yeah.
Philip?
Let me think. Well, the most thing I watched, which I was looking forward to for quite some time, I finally got around to watching Life Itself.
Well.
It's sweet, it's warm. Dare I say it, it's borderline hagiographic. It's just...
I didn't think so, but I know where you come from.
I think it's just that Ebert was just such a genuinely nice guy and believed in what he was doing. And I mean, the proof is in the pudding.
Yeah.
The most revered critic in the English-speaking world.
But they do get into a little bit of the Siskel and Ebert thing. The outtakes are fantastic.
Film is at its best, yeah. When they are sniping at each other.
Oh, and don't they?
Don't they, though?
They're so hilarious. Those the intros, the practical takes, where the intros of the show are hysterical.
Because people always wondered, is the antagonism real?
Yes.
There had to be some real things in there. Clearly.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they respected each other and obviously liked each other to some extent as well, to keep going for that many years.
I found it very moving, I'd say.
It is genuinely moving, because even though, like I say, it flirts with being just, oh, Ebert.
Well, I mean, it's almost, the director's essentially handpicked.
Yeah, Steve James, who Ebert
championed
from the day he saw Hoop Dreams. But it's the subject himself who dictates what happens for most of it.
Sure.
And that's, thank goodness, because he's clearly not interested in being necessarily exalted. He just, when you see him in his last days with... it's warts and all.
It's shocking, isn't it? I mean, I was shocked by it. Even though I'd seen the pictures and I'd known. There wasn't a shock in the sense that obviously he died and I'd seen pictures of post kind of operations and stuff.
Yeah.
But it's still kind of jarring to see.
It's strange because in one part of the film, you're watching him doing his reviews with Siskel and they're being live and whatever. And then cut to just last year and you see him with... just barely able to move.
Yes, but then you get the kind of the freeing of the voice online and the prodigious kind of work rate that he kind of took up.
In terms of how he used his blog and his website, he always had his finger on the pulse.
Oh, he was ahead of it. I mean, very, very good. I mean, we have the benefit of that now with the kind of the vast amount of reviews and stuff online and articles and books and stuff that it's there for everybody to read.
And of course the website is still going and people contributing to it under the Roger Ebert byline. Hello, Matt Zoller Sites, by the way.
Yeah.
Gives a job.
Yeah.
Indeed. It's worth a shot.
Yeah, yeah.
It is wonderful though. It's very moving, very funny.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything you want in a documentary.
And Marty pops up to
Like you said in your review, if it's someone very special that can leave Marty speechless.
Yeah. And a little tear in joy.
Yeah.
Yeah, indeed.
The only other film of note that I watched recently was Ernest and Celestine.
Hmm. I've never seen it.
A very sweet little French animation. I will point out, crucially, I watched it in the original French because I don't do dubs. Even things like Ghibli, when they do some... by all accounts, really good dubs, always go with the native tongue.
Yeah.
It's quite sweet. It's basically the story of a world populated by bears, and underground there's a world populated by mice. And a young mouse girl and this bear, they become friends. That's pretty much it. But the animation is gorgeous, lovely hand-drawn. The voice actors do a lovely job bringing these characters to life. And it's aimed primarily at kids, but there's something just so sweet and inoffensive and lovely about it that
there's something well for
worth
everyone.
Watching. Yeah, for anybody, any age.
Oh, I've never seen it. I may check it.
Well worth a look. It was nominated for Best Animated Feature Oscar last year.
Oh, excellent.
So that's about it from me. Niall?
Well, being that it's Thanksgiving on Thursday, I decided to watch Planes, Trains and Automobiles.
Those are pillows.
Fantastical.
It's one of the few films that actually really get a big belly laugh out of me repeatedly.
And no matter how many times you
see it,
it's when he's losing his shit after he's been left by the rent-a-car.
Oh, yeah.
If I wanted a joke, I'd have followed you into the men's room and watched you take a leak. Steve Martin's so... He's funniest when he's bitter.
But they're so well paired. Yeah. I mean,
him and
they're so... Like, Candy's great. Like, and Martin, sorry, and Martin was still great then. It was pre-slump Martin, if you will.
Yeah.
And... They're magical. Chemistry. We talk about chemistry just there, but that's chemistry. Like
it
and
is.
All day,
really
like,
is.
Like even the visual kind of surreal gags where you know the car is fitting through the gap and it is. I love that stuff. It's fantastic. Like I remember the delight of that one as a kid when I saw that force. Like what? You can't get out of film.
And the gags go from something as sublimely ridiculous as that to just the scene where they're arguing after they're standing on the road. It's night. And the car's catching fire by the just oh, it's magical. I love it.
And also quite moving at the end as well. It actually has a bit of a thing, like an actual pull to it. Like, and it's not too sentimental, but it's nice.
Yeah, it's
the ending is a touch too sappy.
I think it's a favorite. I gave
about.
It a pass. Yeah,
it's
just
John Hughes though. So
yeah,
it's
always going to end that way.
Yeah. So I also watched a movie written by John Hughes, Home Alone.
Fantastic. I love Home Alone.
It's base humour, but goddammit, if it's on,
it's
I will watch
it.
It's
so much fun. Exactly. I mean, it's one of those films you come across, you can't just watch it for 5 minutes and cut to an hour later.
Yeah, it's... I just love the fact that Pesci made that and Goodfellas in the same year. I think...
He always carried over that. He almost carried over all the language from Goodfellas as well.
It's the same. It's a very simple performance,
yeah,
like you say.
It is.
Well, the thing is, he kept cursing, and they had to continuously reshoot. That's why he's
and Macaulay Culkin was never the same.
Culkin's great at it.
I reckon if Culkin went into therapy these days, he probably has. It's all Pesci's fault, man.
He hung around with Michael Jackson.
No,
I think Joe Pesci's. Pesci gets off easy enough, like
probably.
Yeah.
But yeah, the slapstick of those two.
Yeah, Daniel Stern as well. They don't rate Daniel Stern. He's great.
Whatever happened to Daniel Stern?
Yeah, that's the Slickers.
Not a lot.
No.
He never hit that height.
It's a pity.
Yeah. It is a lot of fun. Definitely.
It is.
And I rewatched Ocean's 11 as well.
The original or the remake?
The remake.
The remake is excellent.
Yeah.
It's an exercise in how to make a film.
It really is.
It's how to edit a film.
Oh, it is so elegant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not a film. It's not a term I would use about a film that's so much fun usually. But it is.
It is elegant.
Oodles of fun.
And it's like it's almost like it is technically, I guess, it's a blockbuster because you get the cast and stuff. Even though
it's
a caper.
And it has the box office returns.
But it's like every blockbuster kind of how flabby they are compared to that, because it's just
everything just has its place, like you say, even though those 11 guys plus however many more in the cast and that setting of Las Vegas, it's huge, it's bright, but as you say, tight.
Come on, watch it now.
Yeah, it's great.
And
it was on Sky Movies, one of the Sky Movie channels,
and as again, the elegance is in Soderbergh's cinematography, the David Holmes score. It's
one of my favorite moments, actually, if I recall it, when I think George Clooney's character is teaching like the guys out of like Dawson's Creek to play poker or something.
Yeah.
Or do something, and he walk out, and they're all being screamed at. George Clooney and Brad Pitt are walking past, and not know it. So I love that.
That's true. I watched that film a lot when I was a teenager. I haven't watched it in a long time, but now I really must.
So, do you want to watch it now?
Let's go. Goodbye. This will be a very
enjoy the podcast.
Now we'll stay put.
So we move on to movie news.
Ooh.
Sad news in the last 14 days.
The passing of
Mike Nichols.
Mike Nichols.
Yeah.
Who is the most auteur of mainstream directors. He made some awesome stone cold classics. Like
The Graduate.
The Graduate being
the obvious one.
Yeah. The most
Who's afraid of Virginia Woolf being the... I think possibly the first one I saw of his.
It was also his first.
Very young. Well, I shouldn't have been watching it.
That's a heck of a film as a debut.
Being terrified by it. It's a terrifying film.
You're bald and you're drunk.
Catch 22, which is a really interesting film that kind of paled a little bit in comparison to MASH when it kind of came out at the time. I think got more of the plaudits.
Which is a shame because, as I mean, Catch 22 is one of the finest books ever written.
Yes.
And it's very, very difficult to adapt.
It's a film like that. Pretty goddamn good job, like.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I love the film.
I really like the book is sensational. The film is very good.
But the more you talk about any of the films he made, the more thing he dealt in were the travails of characters, upper middle class generally, but they're all smart.
Yeah.
These are not, you know, usual everyday bozos.
No, these are
intelligent people making serious mistakes, and you feel for them because of that.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
That ropes you in.
I went through a bit of a kind of Neil Simon phase back then. I read a lot of his plays and watched a lot of the movies, that, you know, the Odd Couple and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And so I have a real soft spot for Biloxi Blues with Matthew Broderick and Christopher Walken, and Christopher Walken essentially doing Orly the Army and kind of thing, that kind of platoon commander kind of guy, giving people crap all the time.
Is that the one where he talks about the latrine?
Yeah.
Latrine.
Yeah, that's the very one. I really like it. It's not perfect. It's a bit tone the auto pace from, I remember, but I really enjoyed it. Broderick's great.
He also gave the world the greatest movie tagline of all time.
Hit me with it.
For Day of the Dolphin.
Oh, yes. I read that. It's fantastic.
Unwittingly, he trained the dolphin to kill the president of the United States.
That would never be better.
It's wonder Kirk Douglas had a career after that tagline.
I couldn't want to watch the movie. I've never seen the movie, obviously. But
George C. Scott.
Oh, George C. Scott, rather. Yeah. Oh, how do I confuse it? It's
kind of want to see it.
I've never seen it, but
that's the kind of thing I see on a Saturday night in the Hollywood Babylon and in the lighthouse. Very easily going to turn up see that.
It also, he was also responsible for one of the most astonishing things I ever saw in a film in recent years, the sight of Julia Roberts getting called an effed up slag. Thank you, Clive Owen. Closer.
Yes.
Bit stagey, but I like it.
I like it as well. I saw it in the cinema came out, and it kind of, I knew vaguely about the play. I didn't really know too much about it, but yeah, he didn't pull his punches. It was pretty full on.
Portman and Owen.
Yes.
Top form there.
Owen is great. Partner's great as well, but I think Owen kind of owns it for me, if you pardon the... Sorry.
Go F yourself, you writer! Right. What an insult. Love it.
Disdain.
He had quite a career. Working Girl, Postcards from the Edge, Remains of the Day, the Jack Nicholson starring Wolf.
That's a terrible film.
It really is.
I saw that in the cinema as well. That's a dreadful film.
He came back from that. He was a producer of Remains of the Day. He came back from that and he did Birdcage.
Birdcage is so fine film.
Wolf is in between the two of those, Remains of the Day and The Birdcage. Jeez.
I just remember that bit in Wolf where Nicholson kisses on James Spader's shoes. I'm marking my territory. Oh, God.
My God, that's the high point of the film. That is. There's so much slow motioning of Jack Nicholson running around the forest, because I don't know what age he was, but he really, really shouldn't have been cast in that movie.
It would have been mid-50s at least.
So I was like, please stop making me watch this. It's terrible.
But we'll forgive him because he gave us so many good
films. Fine filmmaker and sadly missed.
Yeah, he did an awful lot of them were adaptations of books, because you have Primary Colors as well, which is
that is a sharp film.
Yeah, I liked it.
It's Travolta, and
Emma Thompson.
Better roles. Oh, yeah. He's not at all Bill Clinton. Not at all.
Well, Bill Clinton likes women, I suppose.
And his last one, of course, was Charlie Wilson's War, which is...
I don't mind it. It's okay.
It's a great book.
It's shockingly lightweight for a true story, but I give it a pass just for Philip Seymour Hoffman.
I think the problem that I've read the book, and it's really, really good, Philip Seymour Hoffman is great and perfectly cast. Hanks isn't, unfortunately. And it doesn't have the heft that it should
have. This is the thing. It's a true story. You struggle to believe that after seeing it.
Yeah. No, it's a good book, but it's an okay film.
And we'll leave it on this book. He has one of the greatest, apart from one of the greatest taglines of all time, he's also has one of the greatest thank you credits in a film. For Capturing the Freedmans, he's down for particularly good advice.
That's fantastic. Also, Catherine Feedings is amazing.
It is. Mr. Murphy, are you trying to seduce me? Move on, yes, move on. We missed you, Mike.
Yeah, yeah.
So, next up on the news, we have X-Men Apocalypse. It's cast Oscar Isaac as the main villain, as Apocalypse.
Don't care about the film, but that's a good choice.
I kind of do care, as on record of really liking the last one. So, yeah, I'm in.
As a villain, he's going from strength to strength, isn't he?
He's fine with me. Jeez, between that and
Star Wars,
I mean, good God.
I don't know, though. It'll take a lot to top his performance in Llewyn Davis for me.
Yeah. Great.
When do we see him most violent year?
You mean like flying cars? Yeah. Tang? That's what he says, Tang.
That's a fine film.
It is.
I need to rewatch.
And as you say, a most violent year coming up as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, which trailer looks great.
Jessica Chastain picked him to play her husband in it.
I wish that happened to me. I'd say Philip they're would saying probably you. He would kill
I would
he
kill
he would kill
yeah. I would.
That's fair.
So
I will.
I shall.
Don't joke about that, Matt. Seriously. No,
some mad stuff happening with the Steve Jobs biopic.
This is going crazy.
Yeah, so Sony dropped it, Universal picked it up, Bale left it, Fassbender's in, and now Natalie Portman has joined the cast. So
is Fassbender definitely in?
Apparently so.
We'll see. Give it a few days.
Is Danny Boyle even still on this?
Danny Boyle is still on. Sorkin is writing, so we know that much.
Are we sure he's still writing? I have no idea what to think anymore.
I chatted a little bit tonight about this earlier. I'm worried.
Odd.
I like, for all that pedigree, there's something not quite right there.
No, definitely.
I don't think.
Natalie Portman has signed on for an underwritten role. So.
No, he didn't mean unspecified. He meant underwritten.
Sorkin.
Yeah. She will walk into a closet and then knock a glass off a table and set fire to somebody.
And not wear pants.
And not wear pants.
Yeah.
I think you're selling it too well.
I'm in.
Natalie Portman doesn't wear pants. Jobs.
We all want to see that one.
Yes. Anyway.
Yeah, let's move on from that.
Two Northern Irish films are up for Oscar consideration. So the Oscar shortlist for Best Short Film came out last week, and on it, there are two Northern Irish set films.
Excellent.
Which star actors from both sides of the border. So the two films are Boogaloo and Graham, which is directed by Michael Lennox, and stars Martin McCann, Charlie McKenna.
Boogaloo?
Yeah.
Is it electric?
I was going to make that joke, but I said, no, nobody will do that.
It's set in 1970s Belfast, and it sees two young boys discover the facts of life, aided by the help of their pet chickens.
I want to edit a story.
It's a nice looking film.
I need an adult.
You make it sound
like I need an adult.
There isn't a trailer for it yet.
There isn't a trailer. You make it sound like it's two young boys watching chickens have sex.
It's more than that.
I hope so.
It's been nominated for. It's
invited dinner for.
It's definitely more than that. Then the second one is Stephen Finglinton's SLR. So this is a story, and this you can watch. It's all, if you go onto the website, you can watch this in its entirety. It's Stephen Finglinton's drama about a guy who he's really into voyeur pornography. But
are we sure we're talking about the last film?
No, but when he discovers one of the pictures is a picture that's close to home, he tries to seek out the photographer. This is the story. Liam Cunningham, it stars, and then
Liam Cunningham's fine actor.
Yeah, and then star on the rise, Ryan McFarland, who's in Skunky Dog. He's the lead in Skunky Dog. He's in it as well.
Excellent.
Amy Wren plays the daughter. Richard Dormer is in it too.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's got good pedigree. It's 22 minutes long, It's good, but I don't know if I would have it as Oscar caliber. But still, it's great to see that it's up there.
Yeah,
and they're both from Northern Ireland.
They're both from Northern Ireland, yeah.
And yet neither of them feature Daniel Wilmot.
David Wilmot.
And you were saying Gary Wilmot.
The Wilmot brothers, ladies and gentlemen. It's like a 3-week circus.
Here's a script.
Yeah.
Oh, apologies, Wilmot's all.
Oh, it's dreadful.
That is dreadful.
So the Galway Film Flat, speaking while we're at this close to home news, Galway Film Flat has been named one of the 25 coolest film festivals in the world.
Excellent. This
or do it in the Jeremy Clarkson, in the world.
In the world.
Please don't, because I hate that guy.
Don't we all? That's why it feels so good to mock him sometimes.
Yes, but I had to punch him. Hey, that's a different podcast.
I'll hold him back if you want to.
Thank you.
So that's pretty cool, you know, that the that it has.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a
lot of things. There's so many.
Yes, that's cute.
Yeah, so I think it's great. But the thing is, now it may attract hipsters, and that's kind of worrying.
I see they're going next year speaking of hipsters.
There we go. The one thing, Jason, that I would definitely say about you is you have hipster written all over.
Thank you. No, sincerity was moving.
Jason's about as hipster as bacon and cabbage, ladies and gentlemen.
Ironic bacon and cabbage.
That's pretty hipster, I grant you.
Yeah.
So the Cork Film Festival finished as well, and it declared it's been made eligible for Oscar now. So
good.
Yeah, it's an Oscar qualifying festival. So the Grand Prix International Short that wins there is eligible, and so what won was More Than 2 Hours by Ali Ishgari. So it's an Iranian.
So
filmmaker.
Obviously we don't get to send an Irish film then, that regard, does it?
Is there
an Irish kind of strand there?
There's an Irish strand as well. The Grand Prix Irish Short went to Anywhere But Here by John Hayes. So the two of them
are eligible. Excellent.
The long list for the 2016 Academy Awards.
So. Good.
Yeah. So that's brilliant that we have
that's another one.
That's another one.
Galway had it as well.
Yeah, and Foyle too.
And Foyle,
yeah.
Excellent. So, three in the country, that's pretty good.
Yeah. So the spirit of the festival, the Gardarum Spirod na Fuele, went to the Tribe!
Oh, cripes.
Yes.
Well done, Cork.
It is that you dislike it.
It's a hard film to like. I admire it immensely, but cripes. Watch it and see what I mean. The Tribe is going to get a lot of awards and a lot of attention, and just for the size of its gumption, it just...
God, it is.
Yeah. It's... Oh, boy.
And the audience prize went to Patrick Stane.
Yeah, another.
Not the Tribe, then.
No.
building yet another mantelpiece, Terry McMahon.
Yeah. Terry McMahon is doing he's part of the Snackbox Sessions, which is a filmmaking for filmmakers event that's been hosted by Snackbox Films in the Sugar Club on December 8th. So, full details of that are up on the site, too.
But excellent.
He's one of the panelists. So.
He gives good copy.
Yeah.
We all do, Jay.
I've seen him as a member of a panel at Underground, and he's
worth the admission.
He's worth the admission.
He really is.
It only costs tenner, so it's not that bad. I shall be there too. So.
Say hello if you're there.
Yeah.
Moving on to the top 10.
This could be fun.
In 10.
At 10, The Homesman.
I saw this at the weekend. The Homesman. I'm thrilled it's in the top 10.
But it's not a Western.
Ask Robbie Collin, I don't know.
It's a hysterical article.
That is great. Robbie Collin interviewing Tommy Lee Jones.
Really good work.
Got
Tommy Lee Jones walked out of it.
At the start. But he came back. But give him that.
It's bizarre, though. But it clearly is a Western.
Even though it's set in the Midwest. It's a Midwestern. I'll tell you what it is. It's the most peculiarly odd Western I've seen in a while. I kind of loved it.
That's a good thing, though.
It is.
I mean,
it really is.
You're trying to grab something new out of a well-worn genre.
It's premiered at Cannes earlier in the year to critics going, huh? And that would be the initial reaction. Fair enough. The basic story is Hilary Swank plays a woman living on the plains in the mid-1800s. And she recruits Tommy Lee Jones's... Very gruff.
Surprisingly gruff.
Very gruff.
I was going to say suave.
Very debonair. Those, you know, the ashes on his face and the beard, that's all very suave. She recruits him after saving his life for this an unenviable task. Basically, bring three crazed women back to Iowa. It's a 5-week journey across the plains.
Are they nuns? I think they were nuns.
No, they're all women who have been driven crazy by their various experiences in this life. And the journey is perilous, the journey is long, and it's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. Swank is excellent. Jones is pretty damn good too, although I'd say his work as a director Trump's work as an actor here is he's got a remarkable eye for the absurd, and the script is full of it, full of the absurd. It is strange.
And absurd. I don't think those two go together at all.
Oh, they do here. They really do here.
No, they do. The man wore a vial of blood around his neck, for Christ's sake. He's a lunatic.
Is that not Billy Bob Thornton?
That's Billy Bob Thornton.
That's Billy Bob, yeah.
Jesus.
The two of them are mental.
But his previous film was very, very good as well.
The Three Burials of Occhiatis Estrada.
Switchblade as well.
That's Billy Bob as well.
Well, there we go. Yeah, I'm in this Billy Bob mode. I can't get out of it.
Yeah, that is weird.
Get out of that, will you? Yeah. Oh, Jesus. If you start talking about like all the pretty horses you're getting out of, you're getting scared.
Which is definitely a Western.
Yes, it is.
It's a snooze fest as it happens. But it is strange. You're going in expecting a pretty standard Western. You're not going to get it.
Oh, okay.
You get some tropes of it, and you also get James Spader in a cameo doing a ridiculous Irish accent.
I mean,
An Irish accent is never a good thing.
Well, now I'm pretending to be Irish. And
is it that bad?
It's that bad. It's the film. The film
would you do it?
The film has problems, definitely. But if you go in willing to forgive, and you're going to get a heck of a return.
Okay.
I really liked it. It's just hovering outside my top 20 of the year.
Oh, okay, that's pretty good.
I may be alone on that.
Fair enough. At 9, Alexander and Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day.
Oh, I hope it's out of the top 10 next week, just so you don't have to repeat that title again.
Yeah, so...
Doing all right.
It is. It's doing good money. It's
should be good for half a mil by the end of the month.
It's nothing to be sneezed at.
No, it's not.
It's only open
half a mil more than I have.
It's only open in the States relatively recently. It's open here longer than that. So.
True, yeah, true.
It's mad. At 8, Gone Girl.
This has taken quite a plunge this week.
But it's been going around for a while.
Yeah. This is its 8th week of release.
Like, it's done. It's gone like gangbusters, isn't it? Really?
It'll finish with, what, 2.7 million?
Which is seriously impressive.
Very.
It's great to see a film with actual teams, you know, doing well.
I as I said before, I'd like to see a film that actually caters to an adult audience doing well. I have issues with the film, but even still, it's fine to see it. Yeah. More of those kind of films, please.
Will we have any more of those in the top 10? Stay tuned to find out.
So, what number am I at?
Oh my god. Number 7.
At 7.
Good god, man.
Yeah, I know. I decided to close that and try open something else. It is an opera.
The Barber of Seville.
Yes.
Bloody operas. Coming over here taking our cinema places.
I'm almost inclined to agree with you on this because
something else should be in the top 10. I'm starting to get a little kind of annoyed by this. Am I the only one? Because
I can see where you're coming from, but it doesn't annoy me quite as much.
I
think that's only because I'm thrilled the Holmesman is actually in the top 10.
But just, at some point, though,
it made only 16 grand, the Holmesman. It's so low to be in the top 10.
Did it make 16 grand?
That's phenomenally low.
That's because number 1 dominated.
Covered up everything. Yeah, that's fine, but I don't know.
Number 1 made half as much again as all the rest of the top 10.
Yeah, just depressing. Anyway, move on.
Yeah.
At
6, The Book of Life.
This is still here, I'm impressed.
I'm not.
5 weeks in charge. Seriously, go watch it. It's lovely.
No. Sorry, no.
Jay doesn't do lovely.
Tell me it's depressing and miserable, not there in a heartbeat.
Depressing, miserable, possibly in a foreign language.
Yeah.
It's
better die at the end.
It's based on the Mexican Day of the Dead, so you could claim
tell
it.
Tell him it is the sequel to The Tree of Life. He'd be there
Spanish.
In a shot.
I would.
I know, so would I.
So predictable.
I know.
At 5, The Drop.
And it's dropping. Slowly, but surely.
Yeah, 38% drop, that's big enough for week on week, but not as big as what happened at 2, but...
Yeah, but, again, reasons.
But the disturbing thing is that it was doing significantly better than the WhatsApp 4, and now it's neck and neck.
And what is it for?
Nativity Tree, Dude, Where's My Donkey?
Oh, dude, where's your dignity?
Who?
How much you made families, how can you expose your children to this?
212,523
euros. Oh, all this means is that this time next year we'll be griping about
Nativity 4.
Yeah, of course we will. And etc., etc., to the dawns of time. That's how it works. Like, I mean, people will go and see it, and that's how it's going to be.
It was savaged by critics. I mean,
it doesn't matter. It's
what
critic-proof.
A surprise.
Yeah. But it's critic proof.
Oh, that's what it's showing. It only dropped 17%.
That said, though, if we were to compare Nativity 3 to Nativity 2 and the original, you'd wonder how well it's doing in comparison.
Probably diminishing returns, but they probably don't cost a lot.
No,
well, that's the crux of the thing.
When
they
you're
don't.
Actors, Martin Clunes, I don't get paying.
When you're getting into when you're getting into economics, though,
so I don't know. Doc Brown looked like a cost
the first
a lot.
One was Martin Freeman.
So you can own the Martins.
Yeah, from Martin Freeman to David Tennant to Martin Clunes. Yeah, that's a drop.
Like, if you think about it, like, once you get the first film hit or whatever it is, like, you can reduce whatever, call the name, and just like your costs. It's all economics. Reduce the costs, make as much money as you can, and keep doing it until it breaks even or loses money.
It's called the Luc Besson model.
Yeah.
Essentially,
the Lucy, booked that trend.
Over and over again. So,
by that rationale, at this rate, Nativity 4 will star Richard Fairbrass and his sidekick will be a bag of chips.
I may watch that one.
Oh, dear. Act 3, The Imitation Game.
A pale imitation of a good film.
Yeah, we Philip is not a big fan.
No. Nan's all right on it.
Yeah, well, yeah, but I became increasingly bitter as I wrote the review because of you.
This is what I do.
He's a Svengali figure.
A Svengali of misery.
The Rasputin of film critics.
I would take that title.
Wouldn't you?
I'm patenting that. The Rasputin of film critics. That's me.
Jeez, it'll take us four different times to murder him in order to kill him.
I am immortal. Rasputin has spoken.
Rescue
team. Hey, I even come with a theme tune. I'm liking this title. I could take this.
I bet you could.
At 2, Interstellar. Suffering a 53% drop.
Yeah.
You know what? I would say. Yeah,
that's back next week, though, won't it?
It's.
Probably.
I don't know. It'll
drop.
The film I won was fishing in its pond, so.
Which?
The film at number one.
Well, yeah, that's true.
But then again, it's nearly, well, at this stage it'll have 1.5 million. Again, a 3-hour film.
It's not going to come on, it's not going to reach 2, though.
But that's not great.
No.
I'm thinking that's pretty low.
Yeah.
Relatively, certainly below expectations, I would have thought.
Again, it's
for a Nolan film, if we're going to go down that road.
Yeah, because Inception went over expectations. And then the others all had Batman in them, so...
Yeah, there you are, you see.
That doesn't hurt.
This is a relatively original film,
as
which
Inception
is 3 hours
though.
Long. But Inception had a few things on its
Also, Wolf of Wall Street was 3 hours long and made more money.
Wolf of Wall Street is the second highest grossing film of the year, so, yeah.
Well, again, like we said before, the critical response to Interstellar has been polite.
Yeah, it's been polite.
As opposed to ecstatic for most of our films. And
the bar was set so high, though.
That's the problem. We've discussed this.
I think it's become a victim of its own hype.
Yeah. No films have this, though.
Even though worldwide it has more than made its money back, it'll gross these
it's killing it in China and stuff like that. Like, I mean, but I imagine there's more weariness now in terms of.
He'll have a harder time getting that budget again.
Because, I mean,
he doesn't need it, though. He really doesn't.
Well,
he says that he's not coming back now that he can make blockbusters. And
he should.
He really should, because the more interesting films are significantly less budget.
Yeah, this is true.
Anyway, at 1,
I'm talking about the
diminishing returns, but not in the international market, in the US.
Yeah, in the US.
Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 1. So, in the US, we made $121 million.
Imagine that's a failure. Like, imagine
to make 150 to 160 million, and Lionsgate took a 5% stock hit because
that's insanity.
It opened low.
That seems like insane to me.
Well, they can reassure themselves of one thing: they'll get the bounce back with part two.
Yeah, one of the reasons that dropped is because they've split the book into two parts. But
ironically enough, a move based on what can be little more than pure greed.
Yes.
There's nothing more other than
Yeah, but money. One of the things about that is, while this one will, it'll probably end up somewhere around between 700 and 800 million globally. The other one, the second one, will get a billion.
Yeah.
So the combined one will be 1.8 billion or 1.7 billion, which the single movie was not going to do because that's beyond Titanic territory. That's, you know, that's...
But that's what they aim for, isn't it? I mean, it doesn't matter if people are disappointed that they split the book in half. None of them matters.
The same
it's
thing
all about adding up the sums.
It's the same thing with Harry Potter,
it's
the same thing with Twilight.
Cynical, isn't
it's
I know we've
horrible.
Been noticed. It's like, it's actually treating the fans like...
Idiots.
It's not quite the Hobbit level of splitting.
It's
no.
not a million miles away. It's not the Hobbit level, which is...
It's presumably better than the Hobbit.
I would imagine so.
No, I haven't had a chance to see it yet either.
What? I thought you'd see it four times by now, no?
My wife was away and I wasn't allowed to go see it without her. So.
Ah, there's the rub, you see. Jay, have you seen it? Has the wife let you see it?
It's past
I haven't seen it just yet, Philip. Thanks.
Past a million at the Irish box office. After a week.
It's ridiculous.
Well, there you are.
It's silly money, isn't it? It's kind of silly money here.
Yeah.
Good for them, I suppose. Like, I mean,
sure
don't
it was showing every half an hour. There was 24 screenings a day in Cineworld.
Jesus, wet.
I didn't go to any of them. I can tell you that. I went to the Holmesman instead. And it was blissful.
You're so pure, Phil.
What can I say, Jay?
Bordering on virginal.
Okay, we're going to leave that there now.
Okay, Rasputin is officially weirded out.
God, stop calling yourself that. Anyway,
you started it.
Started referring to yourself the third person of Rasputin. That's weird.
On to the new releases. So we have 2 weeks worth of new releases. So,
let's get through these.
The first one is Hunger Games Mockingjay Part 1, so we'll skip past that.
Yeah.
Next, well, there was more to be said. It's everybody in Ireland apparently has gone to see it. So,
except us.
Yeah.
Get up for the Chris, guys.
The second one is Get On Up.
Get Down.
The James Brown story.
Yeah.
Hang on. Jay, were you about to do your James
Brown
story?
I was, but thankfully I was stopped. I presume this is very generic. The title depresses me. It's just... I don't know.
I've heard Chadwick Boseman is good, but
I'm sure.
The film is less than.
Yeah.
This is from the guy who directed The Help, Tate Taylor, I believe.
Well, there we go.
Yeah,
generic.
Fine.
I saw that at the Empire's big screen, and I think the event got me more, you know, so I actually enjoyed it.
No, we know what got you more.
What?
Emma Stone's in it.
Oh, yeah.
See?
Yeah, there is that. Anyway, Holmesman, which you've talked about.
And I really liked, and I think it's still in cinemas, and if it is,
please
go see
it. I think
it
is also.
Go. See?
We have No Good Deed.
Remove the deed, and I think you have the summary there.
Hey, on the poster, gent. Put that on the poster. This guy's got it right here.
All accounts, I know I haven't seen it, but it's got savage when it came out. The
States
here.
You won't be seeing
it. It got savaged here as well. Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah.
It looks dreadful.
Yeah, it's gotten absolutely horrific reviews. There's actually quite a good one on entertainment.ie if you want to read a review of a bad film. Then we have What We Do in the Shadows.
This is
I heard good things. I can only see this. I think Priya Bradshaw called it the funniest film this year. Which, you know,
that's strong words from
is,
Mr. Bradshaw.
I mean, it is indeed.
I'm normally wary of is it Jermaine Clement?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Flight of the Conchords.
I got hit miss, but I take it, but I like the trailer.
It looks like a lot of fun.
It looks like now a lot of gags are in the trailer, but still.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's a vampire comedy. I mean,
I know. It should work.
Yeah.
And then some of the gags that's on the trailer.
If it can come even close to pleasing me as much as Only Lovers Left Alive, I'll be happy.
I suspect
it
won't. But right.
Well, that was visual.
Indeed.
And then Winter Sleep.
Ah,
Philip.
This isn't in the top 10. I wonder why. I love this one.
It's in a foreign language. That's usually a good start.
And it's 3.25 hours long. It's Nuri Bilge Ceylan's follow-up to Once Upon a Time in Anatolia. Won the Palme d'Or at Cannes this year. And
his provisional favourite to win Oscar for Best Foreign Language.
Which I suspect it won't.
I suspect so too. It's a great category for the upset.
Yeah.
It's up against Mommy and Leviathan.
I slightly preferred Mommy. I can't.
Xavier.
Yes. But this is excellent regardless. It tells the story of a former theatre actor turned hotel proprietor in rural Cappadocia. And
my favourite is part
of all the areas of Cappadocia, rural Cappadocia is my. I mean, you have the right time to go on holidays there.
Hey, this could persuade you. The film is gorgeous. Nobody shoots vistas like sailing.
I mean, some of the shots in Anatolia were amazing.
Yeah.
So he's doing the rounds of the provinces of Turkey. Yeah.
Anatolia, Cappadocia. Where to next?
Antalya. Sorry, this is the only one I ever want to know.
Show off.
Yeah.
This guy, he means well. But he's basically insufferable. Nobody around him seems to particularly... Well, not... Yeah, he's disliked a lot. Not just by the people who rent properties from him, but even his own family. His main interactions in the film are his newly divorced sister and his young wife. Significantly younger. There's a lot of tension between all of them. And, admittedly, a lot of the film is just characters talking. But it's riveting. A lot of the talk is about it's about these characters' own situations, but it can also be seen about modern day Turkey. There's a lot of comparisons that can be drawn, and it's staggeringly intelligent. We're talking about films that are made for grown ups.
Yeah,
this is made for grown ups.
Too long though,
arguably. It requires a bit of patience. But if you give it, it rewards you in spades. I mean, it'll tickle the brain tissue. It's got great performance, great look.
There's a lot in there.
Very meaty.
Yeah, and meaty is good. I mean, we don't get enough meaty in cinema.
That's what I'm saying.
Quite frankly.
Yeah, we don't. As I say, if you're weary of the runtime, well, fair enough. But give it a go, and you'll get what you put in.
Good enough.
I may watch it at home when I have time.
I love your enthusiasm.
I probably will.
Hey, you find time for two bloody Hunger Games films between now and next November.
Or 14 visits to Guardians of the Galaxy, or whatever you did.
Six.
I apologize.
See,
six.
That's only two. One and a half viewings of Guardians of the Galaxy. Come on.
You can make a fit Seven Tango into that thing as well. I haven't, but you could.
Shout out to Bellatar, by the way. Yeah. We know he's listening.
Yeah.
2001 Space Odyssey is up.
That's it. This wins. There's nothing else. 2001. It's all 2001.
We're going to see that. We're going to see that. We're going to see that.
I'm going to see that. We are going to see that.
It's everywhere.
It's good. There's a new digital print, isn't there? They've spruced it up.
Are we going?
We are going. No?
Yes. Class trip.
Let's make a play date.
I'm sorry, Jay. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Daisy. Yeah, 2001 Space Odyssey is the definitive sci-fi film.
It's one of the greatest films ever made.
It's in my top 5 films of all time.
And you wouldn't be the only one.
Marvelous film.
Every time, I remember seeing it first. I think it was about 15, 16 when I saw it first. And not understanding the lick of it. But just being blown away by the sheer madness of it, and I thought it was insane when I was younger, because I thought everything had to have a narrative. When it's, this doesn't make any sense. What the hell is going on here?
And yet, once you get up to a certain age, you realize, this is sense itself.
There is sense there, and there's logic.
There is a structure to it. Definitely.
Because Kubrick, if we know anything, is painfully structured in the sense he knows what he wants.
That cut. That
jump cut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. It's one of the most extraordinary things.
Just.
I hit the Blu-ray event
thousands
a couple
of years
ago.
That's Kubrick's genius. To reduce thousands upon thousands of years of evolution to that.
Yeah. And it works. And the handsome. Yeah. We need to see it.
It's just the scenes when he's walking down the corridor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, we were talking about this again.
As a piece of filmmaking,
we didn't get into it earlier, but we sat and Philip were discussing the Jurassic World trailer and practical effects versus CGI.
Ah, bless. But CGI, that is fairly logical.
It is, really. And we're talking
as
about,
a fan, I speak.
And we're talking about the blend of effects for Jurassic Park and stuff like that. And I said to Philip, how for half a second you almost believe you're seeing an actual dinosaur in front of you, which is no mean feat for a film. But when we're talking about space effects and
Interstellar,
it is very beautiful.
It was practical effects.
Nolan is one of the few directors that invest that time.
Thank goodness someone does.
Yeah, no, exactly. And but when you see with Kubrick, actually, logical solutions to filmmaking problems yeah. that are overcome to make
ones that Nolan himself used, like yeah, spinning yeah, sets yeah, and all that yeah. kind of thing.
And how influential it is, like, and how, and again, it's just a, it's a rallying call for actual effects, things that you actually have heft on screen that you can see and can feel, and it's everything, I think.
And every element, from the design to the cinematography, the special effects, it's all
the music,
perfect. The music,
yeah.
The cast, Douglas Rain, isn't even on screen. He steals the show.
The existentialism of it
is the perfect. Is the most accurate computer ever built, and incapable of error.
What film is it?
Yes.
2001 is pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
One of the most perfect films ever made.
It is. Agreed.
And you're all going.
Everybody, if that's not number one next week, by God, you're all going to pay. I suspect.
For more tickets.
More tickets. Yeah, I know, I know.
Oh, you disappoint me, people. 2001.
Then, Lighthouse exclusive, Hockney.
Ooh.
Yep. Know anything about
it? I presume it's a proverbial David.
It is the proverbial David.
Yeah.
I know nothing about it other than that.
But that's pretty much it. It's just it's a documentary about David Hockney.
What more could you ask for?
That is all you want. It's a documentary, so yeah. It's about the foundation of pop art. And yeah, so.
Fans of the aforementioned David Hockney will enjoy, I would presume.
Well,
and then it'll take up another spot in the cinema.
Yeah, well, it's also queer cinema as well. So
that's true.
Because it's a look at his life.
Although he's trumped all the odds.
He declined. Because he declined quite a lot.
But
he's still around. So
there you go.
That's true.
Yeah. Mind you, whenever I look at him, you look at the glasses, you look at there and think, I feel like the guy from South Park. Warhol did it! Warhol did it!
Very good.
Thank you.
Then, we have Horrible Bosses 2.
Oh, yeah. Blimey. New writer Oliver reviewed this on the site for us. It looks like more of the same.
Yeah,
really.
If you liked Horrible Bosses, you like Horrible Bosses.
I was iffy on Horrible Bosses.
I didn't see Horrible Bosses.
It
didn't appeal to me.
It's got Christoph Waltz on this one. I do like Christoph Waltz.
Oh, sorry.
Who doesn't?
Hang on a second. You can't. That same sentence was pointed at De Niro not too long ago. Like, has Rob De Niro in it? Sorry, at some point you have to go, as much as I love an actor, that they're not necessarily going to prove a thing.
He could be excellent in it.
Kevin Spacey, Chris Pine, Christoph Waltz.
You can tell me what. You can report
Jason Sudeikis. I'm out.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I deliberately didn't mention him.
Yeah. But he's back.
It weakened my argument.
Yeah. Charlie
what
Day.
What, I'm an idiot?
I like Charlie Day.
Yeah.
Well, Charlie Day is criminally misused in an awful lot of things.
Pacific Rim.
Being one of them,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
I like Pacific Rim. I know.
You're
I
right.
Liked it. Well...
I love spectacle and I love that sort of film, and the idea of robots fighting monsters is right up my alley, and I didn't like
it. I preferred it to Godzilla.
Oh, I preferred it to Godzilla.
I actually preferred Godzilla, but not by much.
Yeah.
Not I prefer Real Steel, though, if we're going to go down the whole fighting robots thing.
We're way off point here.
Yeah, we've kind of drifted away there.
I think says a lot about Horrible Bosses, too, that we just want to get away from it.
Can we talk about something else, please?
Next. That's the IFI. I am Ali.
Are you?
I'm not, no. But
okay.
Yeah, it's just another Ali doc.
Yes.
We've had so many of these.
Exactly. Will anything ever be When We Are Kings? I mean...
No.
Because for me, that's definitive. It captures a moment of time that...
But besides the fact that this might be redundant, this has actually got some really bad reviews.
Oh, really? I haven't read much better. I just know...
Mostly because... Well, not least because we have so many of them.
Yeah.
But apparently it has... unprecedented access to Ali, present day Ali.
Sure.
And it just takes that, by all accounts, and just marries it to old clips that everybody's seen. And so what?
I mean, the thing about, like, that does not a good documentary make.
Mm.
It requires more, and When We Were Kings did it perfectly because it captured a certain moment.
Even Ali and it kind of gets watchable, you know? So.
Ali's not bad.
Yeah. Well, I like it. And
admittedly,
Smith is great.
I say that as a man apologist. I know, but
it's one of the better mans for me. I really like, and Will Smith's great.
He is.
He's
really, really great. Like, and I'm not a huge fan of this because I don't think he quite fits in a lot of films, but he's perfect for that.
I'll say this though, I'm fearful for his kids.
Oh good god, we're not going to give that's a I podcast know. Extra yeah. right
so,
there.
Brogan wrote a very good review on her site, Haze at the Movies, so I suggest you check that.
Did you like it?
And maybe I will.
Two stars.
There you go.
Paddington. Inexplicably getting raves everywhere.
How did this happen?
I'm not buying it.
I'm not either.
I'm not buying it. I'm
although
sorry.
I kind of want to see it to see.
That's what he wants you to think, Philip.
But I know. Hey, I'm just one
thing.
I know.
I know.
I'm not going to contribute too much to that.
That's
box,
true.
Hey, wait a minute. This is...
Is this how they're roping us in?
No. That, if you start thinking of yourself as just one ticket or just one
that's how
vote,
billions
that's
are made.
How
that's how Avatar made its money.
No. apparently, very, very good.
I'm distrustful. Everybody was like, "Oh, this is going to be dreadful." And I was like,
"Yeah,
oh,
that's
because
the trailer looks
but isn't
appalling.
Isn't that kind of thing of like everybody goes and thinks it's going to be horrible, then it's competent, then they're like,
oh, yes, the
Jay is
yeah.
leading the Paddington
yeah.
rebellion, people.
Yeah, the backlash starts here.
Has to start somewhere.
It could be good, I guess.
Are you going to go find out?
No.
It's a bear that likes marmalade sandwiches.
How could you lose? Yeah. How could you not?
I could think of a few ways. But anyway.
It's unbelievably British, you know.
I think there's an English kind of thing going on here.
You think
you know,
it's yeah. huge critics.
I think there's some serious extra stars going on.
Yeah, I think it's
probably fine.
Phenomenally British, though.
And it looks dreadful.
That's. But not necessarily because it's British, though.
I
know. It looks too kiddie friendly.
It just—I don't know. It should be kiddie friendly.
Well,
it's Paddington, like.
Ooh, the controversy that was.
Were misses? if indeed you were a miss.
Yeah, that yeah.
That's
a cross-dresser,
so
and apparently in that PG. No. Anyway, possibilities are endless. Is Nick IFI?
What
exclusive.
The hell? I'm
sorry. Oh, this the Evan Collins documentary.
Yes, yeah. And Evan Collins is here.
He is. I've seen it. He's going to be at the screen on Friday.
Yeah.
I heard good things. This is really interesting. That phrase is one of the first phrases he could. Say
yeah.
After
a
unbelievable debilitating thing, like the fact that he lived through those. I know I was a bit of an Edward Collins fan back in the day.
Felt guilty when I heard about this film first because it was not long after I was discussing with a work colleague. What happened to Edward Collins? It's a bit of a one-hit wonder.
Oh, it's a new film opening the IFI.
crap.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel bad now.
Jesus, he just got lazy, didn't he?
Yeah,
I can imagine.
Yeah.
I heard good things. I heard really good things.
I look forward to checking it out over the weekend. Then, Stations of the Cross is playing in the IFI and Lighthouse.
You know what? With a title that grim, I'm looking forward to this. It sounds really interesting, actually.
It's the parent and child screening in the Lighthouse, so I don't know how
good
grim
God,
it could
no,
possibly
it could be. It couldn't be, could it?
Hi, Charlene. What's the
is
deal
this
there?
Counter programming?
It's... The story is a young girl growing up in a pretty devout Catholic family in Germany. She seeks to actually experience all the stations of the cross in one of those naively childish attempts to achieve something like sainthood. Sounds great.
Yeah,
there's potential for satire here.
There is. It has a satire tone to it. So.
Yeah, that's what it's going for. It's getting raves. So count me in.
German film about a girl trying to meet God. Okay, I mean, yes.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd be
amazing.
Second in the top 10 next week.
I'll be honest, I'm surprised you're not jumping at the bit, Jay.
I have about 500 films to see. I can't even begin to contemplate.
Get on that.
I'm trying to.
Yeah, we will end the podcast here so Jason can go and see some of those films.
I am running out the door as we speak. Makes running noise.
See you next week.
Bye.